This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. When we send our knowledge-hungry children off to college, they go to do what? To get job training, to spend gobs of our money on finding themselves, or to be stuck in front of a computer screen with limited human interaction in the classroom. As President Obama is calling for reforms on college education and Governor Rick Perry calls for a $10,000 college degree, it is Professor Mark Edmondson who stands against the tide and defends what he calls a real education in his book, Why Teach? Mark Edmondson, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much. Glad to be there.
We're so glad to have you here. Our phone lines are open, and the number is 614-8980. We can take email questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. So, Professor Edmondson, when you went off to college for the very first time, your father gave you a piece of advice. What was that?
My father was sitting at the kitchen table with my brother and me, and we were picking out my courses for my first term at the State University, University of Massachusetts. And I was looking through the catalog, and I said, I think I'd like to be pre-law. And my father said, did you really want to be a lawyer? My father had some experience with lawyers, and it didn't always go terribly well. And I said, lawyers make good money, right? And my father absolutely exploded. He said, what are you doing trying to make good money? You should study what it is you love. And I said, really? And he said, yes. Now, you're a literary guy, right? And I had to admit that I was, or I was trying to be. And he said, well, that is what you should study. That is what you should study. Because we were, from his point of view, we were like, Philip and I were rich kids. We just had no money. So if rich kids could do that, we could do that too.
Wow. Well, I had a similar conversation with my father, but it went in exactly the opposite direction. And he told me to study sciences. I went to study geology, and I bombed terribly. You know, if your father had not given you that great wisdom, do you think that your life would have changed? Or do you think you would have found the right direction eventually?
Nah, I would have taken a literature course or a philosophy course, and I would have been sold. I wasn't made for pre-law anyway. But you're lucky. You know, you bombed early. The problem is a lot of kids now, they get heavily programmed, right, by their parents and by their high schools. And they slug through their economics major, and they get themselves an internship at a brokerage house in New York, and they're 3 years into it before they realize, hey, I don't like this. This isn't me. Not to say that it's not the right path for somebody. Brokerage houses, I don't know. But, you know, the worst thing that can happen to a young person, I think, is to find himself trying to slam his round peg of a being into the square hole of some profession. That's painful. You got out early.
So why teach in defense of a real education, a real education being what?
Real education, I will scandalize some of your hearers by saying this, real education is humanities-based, in my opinion. Reason that is so is that we are the characters who can help young people to know themselves, right? After you read some Plato and some Emerson and some Montaigne and some Shakespeare, you're going to find that all of the things that you came to college believing have been challenged, right? And some of those things are going to be challenged successfully and you'll change your mind, and others of those things will not be challenged successfully. So that you'll get a chance to, as it were, grow up one more time and figure out what you believe, which is going to be somewhat different from what your mother and father and maybe what your priest and imam and what your high school teachers believe. You're going to have a chance to make some decisions on your own. People figure out who they are and what they're about, lead happier lives, and I think they probably lead professionally more successful lives as well.
But going to college is a very expensive endeavor. It can bankrupt a family, and that's no joke. Is that really the right way to be? You know, you're going to go find yourself at the cost of a second mortgage.
Well, you know, college is expensive. That's right. College should be a whole lot less expensive than it is. Right now in America, we have 2.5 million people in jail, costs $160,000 per person. We have a military that can fight three wars simultaneously. We have people who are extremely rich, paying between 15% taxes and no taxes whatsoever. And we say we cannot afford to subsidize public education, which is now becoming, as you say, more and more expensive and is in danger of being, if not destroyed, badly harmed by the unwillingness of our legislators, the people at large, to consider bankrolling things besides jail, armies, and rich people. I'm sorry to be so polemical, but hey, this is my microphone, right?
Right. So, but it is expensive. It does cost. I mean, there is that argument to be made that that we have our priorities, and we'd rather have an army that can fight three wars at once than to be able to have a affordable higher education. But that's the world we live in. And so, if you do go off to college and you're going to go to read Emerson and Shakespeare and think all the big thoughts, then you still have to pay your student loans at the end of the day.
You have to pay your student loans at the end of the day, though those student loans are, funded by the federal government, and the federal government is making a lot of money out of them at this point. The federal government needs to be a lot more generous with student loans, and the federal government needs to be a lot more generous in allowing students to pay them back in light of their means, in light of how much they make as time goes on. I will venture a prediction, and here's my prediction. The students that I have and the students that are graduating with these large quotients of student loans are really good kids for the most part, and they are very tied into doing the right thing and being honest and being true. But at a certain point, they are going to become so angry that I believe they're going to take collective action. And on some day, I dare say it might be on May 1st, they are all going to do something, guided by the Internet, or refrain from doing something, and the student loan mess is going to come to the attention of the of our country.
All right, so like what? They're going to go on a strike, not pay back their student loans en masse, and threaten the stability of the economic system?
You said it.
Okay, and so, but in your title of the book is Why Teach? Mm-hmm. So are you asking people to why not consider to go become a teacher?
Well, what I want to do is put young people in a position where they can figure out what it is they want to do with their lives. And if they want to go out and become teachers, I'm all for it. But, they should have a chance to do what you did. Show up at college, take some courses, figure out what it is they're going to be up to in life. And then they're probably, if they find out the thing that they're best at, they're going to get involved in it. And they're probably going to be successful, and the paying back of their student loans is going to be a heck of a lot easier than it's going to be if they find something that's lucrative but they are not made for. They're going to keep that job for a little while, but they're going to suffer, and I believe in the long run they probably are not going to prosper.
But you say now liberal arts education is more important now than ever. Why is that?
Well, the world is more complicated now than ever, right? We need, and this is Thomas Jefferson, the founder of my university, talking, we need the liberal arts to create or help create citizens, right? And these have to be people who can understand complex arguments, analyze texts, make arguments of their own, respect the arguments of people they disagree with, listen hard to the arguments of the people they disagree with, and deal with a world that's absolutely stunning in its complexity, right? So that we prepare students to do that. We prepare students to become citizens. And I dare say we do so better than the sciences or the economics department or even the commerce school.
Okay, we are speaking with Mark Edmondson. He is the author and professor, the essayist. The book is Why Teach? In Defense of a Real Education. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk. We got callers on the line. Chip, we'll take your phone call. The number is 614-8980. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're speaking with Mark Edmondson. He's the author of the book, Why Teach? He's also a professor at the University of Virginia. He's written a lot of books. My wife loves your books. She's a teacher, teaches English at a local university, and she felt like you were speaking right to her.
Well, tell her I'm very grateful indeed.
All right, let's get to the phones. The number is 614-8980. Chip is on the line. Chip, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. It was just interesting to hear the way your voice changed when you said thinking about the big thoughts. And, I have to say, I spent a lot of years as a mechanic. I was in and out of junior college as often as possible. And, there's a lot to be said about thinking the big thoughts while you're not over-torquing a set of flywheel bolts.
Well, Chip, I certainly agree with you. I was being the devil's advocate when I was talking about thinking the big thoughts. But there are plenty of people out there that think that universities are ivory towers, and that people were thinking the big thoughts is equivalent to fiddling as Rome burns a little bit. Chip,
I really think that the big thing we're not addressing here is the fact that education is an investment and an ongoing thing. And you're right in the idea that we're not servicing education in the way that's necessary, and it's not really a question of fiddling while Rome burns. It's a question of trying to, I guess, arrange the best education we can for our children, give them the best opportunity that we can while we, you know, like you said, you know, an education now is a second mortgage or a second home. But at the same time, we're not addressing the idea that it is important to think the big thoughts. I mean, I would love to have two dozen brand new HVAC guys, but if, you know, they're hollow, then what kind of education have they actually gotten other than the technical part?
Okay, Chip, let me get our guest to respond to that, Mark Edmondson. And you have commented that in the book that not educating our children with liberal arts is equivalent to eating our seed corn.
Well, that's I'm not sure I said that, but it sounds okay.
I think you did.
We are.
I think you quoted Emerson.
Did I? Yeah, I probably did. If Emerson said it, I probably agree. I think that we are trying to help produce generations of citizens who are going to take care of our country and be responsible to each other and to the world at large, and liberal arts does that. And also, you know, because somebody is a mechanic or because somebody does a physical job, which I admire greatly, carpentry, engineering, in the most basic way, it doesn't mean that that person doesn't have to know what he or she feels about a justice and what a good political system is and what it means to be a good and generous person and what compassion might be and what the limits of compassion are in a given life. Those aren't the big questions in any abstract sense. Those are the questions that every human being has got to answer for himself or herself in order to live with any sense of dignity in the world, it seems to me.
Our phone lines are open. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Do you think that a liberal arts education is worth the cost these days? Mike is on the line. Mike, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking the call. I am a retired professor of English, and so Professor Edmondson is preaching to the choir. However, there's a chapter in the book that I thought was extraordinary, and it's on sports. Do sports build character? And I think that that's one of the best written chapters in the book. I just wanted to say that, and that I agree 100% that we need people to think first and then to become good at whatever they're doing second.
And so, Mike, what about this? Tell me more about this chapter. What did you like about it?
Well, the writing. The writing and the conclusions that you did draw about the balance between sports and academe and how it's gone the other way. And it was just the quality of the writing that I enjoyed.
All right, Mike, thank you for your phone call. So, Professor Edmondson, do sports build character? Can you answer that?
Well, sports, I say in this article, are what Plato called a pharmacon. They're a poison and they're a remedy, right? They can build character and courage and loyalty, but particularly football and the hard, kinetic sports, they can also bring about brutality, groupthink, numbness, thoughtlessness. All those qualities are real dangers in football. I'm delighted that your listener liked that chapter because it's now becoming a book called Be a Football Player, My Education in the Game. My time in the game was all of 2 years in high school football, most of it spent sitting on the bench, but that just means I had a long time to watch. I love football overall, though I got a lot of reservations about it. But one thing I would say about football, I mean, I even thought that Virginia was going to beat Oregon this Saturday. It didn't quite happen. But one thing I would say about football is that when people say we need to cut costs at the university, and I agree, we need to cut costs as much as we possibly can to give kids a good education, they say, let's cut German, let's cut the classics, right? They never say, let's think about the fact that the football coach, the head football coach, makes a salary that is about equivalent to the entire salary of the classics department, right? They want to cut Goethe and Cicero. Maybe they should think about cutting first and 10. I mean, I love football. I love it. But do we need it? I know this is anathema to say in Texas. But do we need it on the college level at the expense that we are maintaining it at, as well as at the pro level, which I also love?
Well, here in San Antonio, we have the University of Texas at San Antonio, and they want to be a Tier 1 university, and it felt like they couldn't be one unless they had a real rah-rah football team.
Yeah, that's how people feel, but that's a strange definition of Tier 1. I guess I'd like to say that you become a Tier 1 university by having a really good history department, religious department, philosophy department, English department, but I guess that's out of fashion at this point.
So what book would you want to put in everyone's hand in America to get them to join with you with this, without, not your own book, give me another book that would get people excited about, you know, the liberal arts?
You headed me off at the pass. I wanted to give them my own book. All right, I've been found out. Right now in 2013, I would give everybody a copy of Henry David Thoreau's Walden. And I would get them to read, if not the whole book, at least the first 100 or so pages, where Thoreau makes his case for a life of voluntary, dignified poverty, where he spends lots of time in nature, lots of time writing, lots of time contemplating, and lots of time by himself without a family, I have to say. I don't think everybody would agree with Thoreau that that's the best way to live, and I don't think it would be desirable if they did. But Thoreau is, from my point of view, the American Socrates. He's a great philosopher, though his philosophy is very compressed. And he compels all of us Americans to ask questions about what we fundamentally value. What do we value materially? What do we value politically? What do we value in terms of the way we're going to live our lives? I mean, one of Thoreau's questions, one of his many, is time or money? Which one? And Thoreau's answer to that is pretty dramatic. Time. You'll take time. So not that everybody's going to say, oh, Thoreau all the way. I mean, some people are going to read Thoreau and head for Wall Street, I'm sure. But it will at least focus your mind. The reading of Thoreau at least focuses the mind. It's a great thing to do that.
So right now, President Obama is calling for reforms for college education, and he's looking at outcomes for colleges and universities. He wants to have maybe some sort of ranking system. The details are not out there yet, but there are people in education who are alarmed by this, thinking that the unintended consequences, you don't have to do a lot of thinking to figure out what they might be.
Oh, my goodness. President Obama, admirable and brilliant man though he may be, has been a dramatic disappointment on the matter of education and maybe some other matters as well. But in terms of education, all he ever talks about is jobs. All he ever talks about is prosperity. All he ever talks about is economics. Why doesn't he talk about the cultivation of intelligence and the cultivation of citizens, at the very least, rather than talking all about money all the time? From any point of view, but particularly from a conservative point of view, which I respect, the creation of this kind of a vetting process could be a nightmare. How many government agencies, how many more public employees is it going to take to do this? And how are we going to measure how successful people are in teaching English, history, philosophy? What are the standards for that going to be? And if the standards are how many people do you graduate, how quickly, I can graduate people here overnight. Just give them a bunch of A's and give them as much extra credit as possible. It's got a lot of difficulties, it seems to me. It's applying pressure. It's applying the stick where a little bit of carrot would be a good idea, where a national willingness to take money out of putting people behind bars and flying airplanes over every country in the nation, in the world when we need to, and letting rich people get away with no taxes could be replaced by a national consensus about supporting education to the degree that's necessary.
So do you think that if we had some sort of ranking system, and we already see it with this U.S. News and World Report thing that comes out every year, ranking colleges, and as inaccurate and unreliable as this listing is, we see universities playing to try to rank higher on that list and making adjustments, and to the detriment of the education product sometimes.
I think U.S. News and World Report has been a mixed blessing. I used to think that it was the end of the world. But among other things, I think they encourage more full-time faculty and fewer adjuncts, which is another major question, the plight of the adjuncts right now. They encourage giving the faculty a raise every few years. They encourage a pretty good student-faculty ratio. But I think they also are oriented a little more than I would like, and I'm not an expert here. I haven't followed as closely in the last 5 years as perhaps I should. They're oriented to customer satisfaction, right? So, and customer satisfaction can mean how good are the dining halls, how many sports facilities are there, do we have five kinds of arugula at lunch? And those are some of the things, those, you know, colleges vying with each other for luxury spreads, retirement spreads for the young, that have pushed up college prices, and that's something that colleges are badly to blame for.
Yeah, so why has college gotten so expensive? It's certainly way outstripped the pace of inflation.
Yes. Well, I think it depends on the college, okay? The University of Virginia, where I proudly teach, our tuition is $12,000 a year. And so it's a lot of money to some people, but it's doable to most of the people who manage to get in. A lot of the private colleges have charged market rate with the understanding that they would give effective scholarships. Have they always done that? I'm not sure they have. Harvard University has about $25 billion in the bank, and they continue to raise tuition to the point where we're up at $50,000, $60,000 a year. Why do they do that? Because they can. Right? Because they can. Partly because, at least from what I can tell from the outside, great respect for Harvard in many ways, Harvard is being run like a business, right? When the idea of a business is to make as much profit as you reasonably can. Why does Harvard need $25 billion as an endowment? Are they going to raise an army and invade Yale? Why do they need it? But they're charging more and more money because that is what the market will bear.
And so finally, also, you say that teachers should be uncool, and that's your advice to them, is to be uncool.
Yeah, in a certain sense, you know, uncool is another word for, like, non-expert, non-professionalized, non-over-dignified, ready to show our shortcomings and foibles, as well as being willing to put forward those things that we can claim to be pretty well-versed in. You know, uncool is another word for unintimidating and friendly. You know, I like to think there would be a difference between the archetypal Germanic professor, who is a figure of great knowledge and prowess and is called Herr Doctor Professor, and the American university teacher, who at my university at least is called Mr. or Ms. or Mrs. Because if Thomas Jefferson didn't have a PhD and isn't called doctor, then nobody deserves one. That's the reigning myth anyway, and that's what they call us here. And that's pretty good. And it's on the way to uncoolness, though it doesn't take us all the way there.
All right. I like that no PhD, no doctor talk. That's great. All right. Mark Edmondson, he is the author of Why Teach? In Defense of Real Education. He also is the author of Why Read? And other books, working on one about football. That's going to be pretty good. Thank you so much for joining us, Professor Edmondson. Mr. Edmondson, I should say.
Mr. Edmondson, that's my name. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about poverty in America, the American way of poverty, after the NPR News. Stay tuned.